All right, LA, appreciate you guys tuning in. You heard the open right there. Kirk Morrison in the house. What's going on, Kirk?
Man, Alan Sliwa, man, good to be back, brother. Tuesday nights holding it down with you. Wednesday nights holding it down with you.
How about that?
To be a fun summer, my brother.
How about that? Looking forward to it. And by the way, how about the timing, Kirk? Let me just quick plug here. We got Brandon Graham, World X Games host, coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Pedro Mora, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Dodgers, coming up around 7:30. But how about this timing, Kirk? So here we are, about a half hour ago or so. Twitter, as we thought it would, we thought this was going to happen a few weeks ago. By the way, 6 weeks, I think they were negotiating. But here we are. Baseball's coming back. John Heyman just put out a tweet a minute ago. Opening day is July 23rd or July 24th. Major League Baseball announces. We're here. We got at least the structure and the framework. We're going to have baseball. LA's going to get their Dodgers and their Angels.
Yeah, it's going to be a 60-game season, right? Mm-hmm. I'm saying right now, I'm just waiting for opening day. There's still a lot of time left, right? I'm excited. Same way that I am with the NBA, right? You're excited for it to start, but yet at the same time, you know, there's still time in between, right? July 1st, and the players are going to report to camp. So if they thought they were going to have a 4th of July weekend, you can kiss that goodbye, by the way. Mm-hmm. That's another thought, by the way. That's another tangent I can go on later, Alan. Mm-hmm. But we know July 1st, all players in Major League Baseball will be in their specific spring, or I can't call it spring, it's summer camp now, right? Not spring training camp, but summer training camp as they get ready for a July.
Spring training 2.0, summer training, whatever you want to call it, 2.0.
It's something. I don't know where everybody's going to be at, right? You can't be in Florida because of the spike of the corona. So where do you go do these camps at? So that'd be interesting. Will they be at their own facilities, of the cities in which they play in? So you got a lot to deal with that. That's why I'm saying you still got a lot of time, Alan. You got from now until the start, which they say could be the 23rd or the 24th. Mm-hmm. But just my initial reaction, because you remember last week, what we talked about last week, don't fall for the pump fake, right?
Oh, we were jumping all over the
place. Because last week we fell for the pump fake. We fell for, oh, baseball is back.
And,
oh, this is going on. And we're like, oh, this is going to happen. And then all of a sudden, what happened? Then it wasn't agreed upon by the players. Mm-hmm. Players didn't agree. Owners, Rob Manfred, they agreed. Mm-hmm. Players, they didn't agree. I kept my feet on the ground. I didn't go for the pump fake, Alan.
I fouled out.
I waited. You've been fouled out.
Yeah,
not me. I'm not fouling out.
At halftime, I fouled out.
I'm playing zone defense, brother. I'm keeping it all in front of me. Keeping it all in front of me. And then all of a sudden, boom, once they committed to, hey, I'm playing, now I can commit as a defender. But now it's just about how is this thing going to work now, right, Alan? I think what's the next step?
Well, this is what's supposed to be, Kirk. I mean, the conversation about baseball, the conversation we're going to have now about baseball moving forward, you really felt like this was the conversation we were supposed to be having a month ago. And what I mean by that is, look, I don't think fans are going to be upset at baseball. The fact that they're playing, but maybe they're not playing earlier than they want them to play, or maybe they're not happy with the way how sloppy the negotiations were. I think they'll start forgetting about that, knowing that, listen, all good. At least we're going to get baseball back for 60 games. But think about the NBA. We're going to spend a lot of time on this tonight. When we talk about the NBA tonight, what do you think is going to be some of the main topics about the NBA moving forward? Wouldn't you say, Kirk, it's going to be about COVID-19, how they can keep it safe,
correct,
what players are going to test positive.
Right.
That's what's going to shift with Major League Baseball. We're not going to have the conversation anymore of how sloppy the negotiations have been. What we're going to say is, are they going to get a chance to actually finish the season? That's the real conversation.
Yeah. And we got to see what happens if a player does test positive. This will be the three major professional sports. Sorry, all my soccer fans out there. I still love you. If you want to take it up with me, you can come to Twitter at Kirk Morrison. But we know baseball, we know basketball, we know football dominate. I wouldn't say North American sports, but definitely the U.S. of A. Now you could throw in hockey if I say North American, and obviously soccer's there.
But that's the ranking. That's just realistically, right?
That's realistic.
When you turn on SportsCenter, there's a reason why there's certain sports that are leading the news.
Right. And then there's also a reason why everybody always has to talk about a big three, right? Teams always have a big three, right? NBA, who's your big three? NFL, who's the big three? So the big three we know in the U.S. of A, in our country, in America, is obviously baseball, basketball, and football. And I think with, you know, baseball being the first to come back of the three, definitely you want to see how does this work? Because you want to see, hey, when opening day, first of all, how do we treat opening day? Is it still like the opening day where, remember, everybody used to ditch school to go to opening day? It was like the one game we all went to throughout the year, and you made sure you had tickets for it. Have they even talked about fans? Is there going to be no fans to start
the season?
Definitely
no fans. Yeah, definitely no fans. But
no
fans? You know what you may be doing, Kirk? Even if you're not, you know, ditching school to go catch a game, but you're probably, if you're at home and you're still working from home, you know the games are going to be on TV.
Correct.
Right? Everybody's going to be watching it. If you're at the office, you know, for those who are at an office, maybe they got the radio turned on and they're getting a chance to listen to Dodger games or Angel games or whatever game that they prefer. But it will, I think it's going to have an incredible amount of interest as we get closer to July 23rd or 24th. Like, just think about it. The way you just mentioned it, NBA, we haven't had it back, and we're not going to get it back till about July 30th, I think.
Right.
NFL, we'll see if they have to kick the can down the road or they're able to, you know, start on schedule.
Correct.
So I think for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, they'll start training camp right around this time. As these sports, or as I say, Major League Baseball and the NBA will be starting their season, NBA continuing its season, the NFL will just be starting its training camps around that time.
That's right. Okay, so let me read this off real quick. So this is coming directly from Major League Baseball. So MLB announces 2020 regular season. Players to report for training camp by July 1st ahead of baseball's July 23rd through 24th openers. So you're going to have some teams that start on the 23rd and then the 24th. MLB plans to schedule a 60-game regular season, the way you just mentioned, Kirk. There's a good couple paragraphs here that I'll read in just a second, but you know what's exciting about all this now?
What's that?
Kirk, we did a show for 2.5 hours about the release of the schedule. Remember that?
Yes, we did.
For the NFL. So 2.5 hours, we were excited. We were talking about, oh, man, look how challenging this game's going to be. Man, the NFC West is stacked. I mean, we went kind of back and forth. The big games that are coming – now you can start doing this with Major League Baseball. And for the NBA, we don't have the, you know, technically it's just picking up where it left off. But for Major League Baseball, they have to do this completely different than they've done it in the past. There isn't going to be traveling from here to New York or things along those lines. They're going to try and keep it as local as possible. That's going to be the next step.
Yeah, just watching how it's going to take place, how it's going to go down. I think I am excited because you do want to see professional sports. I know the people in Vegas, they can't wait to get professional sports in America back going again, because obviously people want to go down and place a wager here or there. So I know Vegas is ready to get that part of it. But like I said, when I growing up as a kid, baseball was my first love. I loved swinging a baseball bat. I love going outfield, and I love going to the ballpark, right? Whether for me it was going to Candlestick Park to watch a Giants game, or the Oakland Coliseum to watch an Athletics game, or now living in Los Angeles over the last 10 years going to a Dodger game, or if I try to sneak down to our alma mater, San Diego State, and go down to Petco Park and watch a baseball game. The love for baseball is always going to be there for me, and I think I want to see how does this play out, because – for the first time, Alan, for the first time, I'm going to really pay attention to baseball. I really am. And let me clarify this. I've always paid attention. I've always watched it, especially your key series throughout a season. I've always loved the wild card, especially when they went to two wild card teams. Mm-hmm. I watched the ALCS. The World Series. I've been to World Series games and enjoyed that.
Playoff baseball is amazing. I mean, I could say that I almost watch every game just simply because the stakes are so high. There is something about playoff baseball.
There's something about the playoffs and baseball, a little different. NBA different. NFL to me is always still king, because you got one game, and if you mess up, you play bad, it's over with. But I will say this, for the first time in my lifetime, baseball has a sense of urgency from the first pitch of the season, and this never happened in my life before. The first pitch of the season, Alan, has urgency that, guess what? I only got 60. So you can't mess around. You can't lose 2 of 3 in a series. You can't go on a 4 or 5 slump. No. Everything is a sense of urgency, and that's what I think I'm going to pay attention, because everybody realizes that there may be no tomorrow if we go on a losing streak. We got to win today, and I want to see how these managers coach, man. This is this is going back to Little League for me. That's why I'm kind of getting pumped up about baseball right now.
Well, let's do this. Dodger fans that are out there, give us your thoughts. What do you think about the way this is structured? How do you feel about a 60-game season with arguably the best team in baseball, where your margin of error becomes so much smaller? Exactly what Kirk is saying there. And for the first time, you're 100% right, Kirk. And let's talk about it when we come back. This is more similar to football, I guess you can say, right? They're only playing 37% of the season, which every game becomes important. Every series becomes important. Obviously critical for the Dodgers with how stacked they are as well. 877-710-ESPN. We'll talk about that coming up next. This is the Sliwa Show, Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison. All right, all night tonight with Kirk Morrison, and back at it tomorrow with Kirk as well. Kirk, appreciate you doing this, bud.
Always, brother.
As always, appreciate you doing this. Okay, so baseball fans out there, Dodger fans out there, just your thoughts. How do you feel tonight? And we went 6 weeks negotiating to try and get a deal done. Finally, Major League Baseball has got it done. And frankly, Kirk, you know, as I kind of look at it, 2 weeks ago, I would have told you 60 games is not enough, but just because of the circumstances and the position that baseball's in now and the timetable of when they're trying to finish the season, 60 games sounds like the right amount, again, just because of the predicament that we're in, but it's just 37% of the regular 162-game season, right? So just think of that for a second, 37%. What does that mean? It means every single game is going to be important. You go on a 4-game, 5-game losing streak, or you go on a, you know, you win 9 out of 10 games, whatever streak you go on, right? Or if somebody gets injured and they're out for a month, that could be a wrap. And that's what I think is going to make the season so exciting, especially the fact that there's going to be a number of teams that probably would not have a shot over 162-game stretch. Now everyone's kind of in the mix.
Ooh, we're talking about the yin and the yang, baby, right? That's what the yin and the yang is, right? I've been waiting to use that comparison for a long time. And guess what? I'm going to use it today, Alan, because I'm using it because you're going to see some guys who are going to get off to some hot starts, right? Get off into just tearing the cover off the baseball, right? Because now we have to start thinking about who has the better, who has the advantage to start the season. Is it starters, pitchers, you know what I mean? Is it going to be the outfield? Is it going to be the hitters, right? Is it going to be
the DHs in play?
The DHs, yeah, the relief pitchers. What about closers, right? If you're a closer, there is no long season. You got to be ready to go. How many guys have actually been working out?
How fresh are some of these starters going to be? I mean, just think about that. But just think about, you know, let's use Kershaw as an example. If Kershaw over 162 game stretch, who, you know, unfortunately has proven in the postseason, he hasn't come up clutch, right? On a consistent basis, maybe the big moments. At the same time, is some of that because he's used so much during the regular season? Is he going to be as fresh as possible come postseason this year? Because he only had to have X amount of starts, which is much less, obviously, than he's had in previous seasons.
Well, let's think about it, right? 60 games. I'll keep it simple for a lot of people. Show my mathematician skills here. 60 games, right? Five starters, right? Five goes into 60. How many times? 12. So are we talking about 12 starts possible for Clayton Kershaw?
Before
the postseason starts. I would think 12 starts for Clayton Kershaw, perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And he can go into the seventh inning, eighth inning. If he gets up to upwards to 95, 100, maybe 110 plus pitches in an outing, am I saying, woo, I got to save him for the playoffs? No. I think you're getting and molding him and getting him ready for the playoffs, because the way I look at it, 12 starts, pitching in that upwards of 90 to 100 pitches plus is going to get him where he's finally hitting that stride when the playoffs actually start. We're talking about guys who are going to be in mid-season form when the playoffs come around, right? It's going to be a little bit different than a guy who starts the season in April, right? Or late March into April. They go through 12 or 14, 15 starts, and now they're in the middle of the season, but it's that lull in the season, right? You still got a long way to go when you're in a regular 162-game season, not in a 60-game season. So that's, for me, I'm going to see how does this affect some of the bullpens now, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want your relief pitchers coming in a lot more, or do you want your starters to get a lot more work? There are some questions that certain managers are going to have to just play it by ear. Who, to me, has the advantage? Is it the hitters, right? Are some hitters going to go up and just be able to just start raking the ball just across everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Hitting home runs deep. We'll see the DH. What does that look like as well? There's so many possibilities.
This is what makes it so exciting, right? Like, yes. Like everything that you're playing out right there gets me actually even more excited. And look, would you consider yourself from a baseball perspective, Kirk? Would you say you're more of a casual fan?
Yeah, I would say I'm a casual fan. I watch it, though. You know what I mean? I'll get into it for like 3 or 4 days, and I'll take a couple of days off, get a couple more days in. Mm-hmm. I'm not one to go pitch for pitch, though, right? I'm not one to...
It's on in the background, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, but that's baseball. Baseball's okay. That's the one sport where it can be on in the background.
But and, I'm just saying, you know, I'm not throwing my remote at the TV because Dave Roberts... You know, made a move in the seventh inning, and you know, possibly the Dodgers lose.
Game 49 of the season.
Yeah, I'm not one of those guys. Trust me, I know some of those guys. I work with some of those guys that make those kind of decisions. But what I'm saying is that I watch it close enough, and you read a lot too, because there's a lot that goes into it. But I think with such a condensed season now, every day matters, right? I believe, Alan, and look.
That's why there's going to be more fans, Kirk. There's going to be more fans this year because I think you're going to grab a lot of these. I'll tell you why. Because you're going to grab a ton of casual fans that, first of all, are you know, will do anything to get sports back, number one. Number two, Kirk, every game is so critical, like you mentioned. That's one of the things that makes the NFL such an amazing, amazing sport. What?
Baseball got a week, brother. They got 1 week, brother. They got 7 days. Because once that... Once that NBA come back, come on, man. Man, they got 7 days, man. Baseball got 7 days to grab my attention. Because after that,
but I think
I'm getting ready to watch this AAU tournament in Orlando. I've told you about. Okay, so NBA rest of the NBA season.
If basketball starts, you think you're going to stop watching baseball?
Yeah, I'm going to watch it on the late night. I'm going to watch it late night because that's another question. What time are these games going to happen in Orlando? Okay, in Orlando, people remember that is the Eastern time zone. For us folks here on the West Coast, what time will the last games be played?
I want to say probably you think the latest game they'll do in Orlando for the NBA, maybe 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock tips.
5 o'clock. So that'd be
go
eight,
later.
So that would be an 8 o'clock start tip. In Orlando. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there probably won't be a 10:30 tip off. Basically,
that's
in Orlando.
What I'm saying.
Which would give us a 7:30 here on the West Coast. Yeah, which would give us a 7:30 here. And the one thing that I loved about baseball, and which my wife used to hate, she still hates it to this day, was that I always say, "Hey, the game's on." She was like, "Why are the games so late?" I was like, "Trust me. Dodgers ain't playing nothing before 12 o'clock, honey. Like 1 o'clock, you only get 1 o'clock on Sunday when it comes to the Dodgers.
That's right.
Everything is at night. So when you think it's not on, it's on. So we know West Coast baseball, there's always a game on, whether it's in Seattle, whether it's in Oakland, San Francisco.
Well, especially
down in Anaheim.
How about their schedule? Their schedule is going to be, you know, predominantly against, of course, the NL West, but the AL West as well. So you're playing the Mariners, the Angels. The Oakland A's, Texas Rangers, and the Astros. So that's going to be part of it. But Kirk, let me get just because I promoted it. Let me squeeze in a couple quick calls here before we go to break. Dan in Vegas, line two. Appreciate you tuning in. You're on in the Sliwa Show with Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison. Go ahead, bud.
How's it going, guys? Thank you for the call. I definitely agree with both of you on this season. I think it's going to be so much more intense and dramatic because, I mean, I'm more of a Dodgers fan than an actual baseball fan. Like, I love the Lakers, but I'll watch any basketball game. It doesn't matter. But this So, like, you have game one. Everything is heightened from that first pitch.
Yeah.
Now, like, game 15, I might have forgot that the Dodgers had a game that day. But now 25% of the season is gone, and in the midseason, you could have sudden death before the playoffs. The people are getting knocked out. This is awesome.
Yeah, I think, Dan, by the way, I think you're going to get a ton of people that feel the same way. And I know, Kirk, I'm mentioning to you, appreciate you calling in, Dan. I know I'm mentioning to you that you're going to get more of these casual fans. And I get exactly what you're saying. What you're referring to is, well, once the NBA starts, and that's my favorite sport, then, baseball is going to take a little bit of a backseat. But I really actually don't feel that way this year because of the shortened schedule. Let me squeeze in one more quick call. Sam and Ventura, appreciate you calling in. Go ahead, bud. Sam, you there, bud? All right, looks like...
I was thinking...
Okay, go ahead, Sam.
Mm-hmm. I'm here.
Yep, go ahead.
I was thinking the pitchers are going to be in for a rude awakening because the hitters have been hitting off tees nonstop in the off season, and with hitting where it is and home runs and everything, the pitchers need to innovate because they're at a disadvantage coming into the season. They need to start throwing the changeup a lot more. The high and inside changeup, the one that Trout's zeroing in on right now, that fastball, they need to start throwing changeups, and then the two-seam Pedro Martinez that travels in to a righty. Once they start doing that, it's going to add the third dimension and totally disrupt hitting. And that's where the pitchers will be able to have level playing field, like, once again.
Sam, appreciate you calling in. Kirk, you know what's great about both of those calls?
What was that?
We're talking baseball. Like, there's actually a conversation about actually baseball.
We're not talking about sports right now. We're talking sports that are about to start, right? Think about this, and hopefully I'm not jinxing it already. We're not talking COVID.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the start, right? And we're talking about now strategy. We're talking about now people who are going to be watching from the beginning. Like, baseball, and I know it happened because of the pandemic, but if they have some success with the way this thing is going to play out, Alan, could we see now shortened baseball seasons? Because it's like once the paste has come out of that tube, right? Once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't put it back in. Because if you have an amazing 60-game season, an amazing playoff, you can't bring me back to 162, bro. You can't do that.
You know what? Let me tell you. By the way, I couldn't agree more. 162 games is too much.
I don't want that.
I know that's for another conversation, but you know what it comes down to, Kirk?
Just what's
that? They throw that money around. Look how much 162 games, the TV contracts that come into play, the contracts that go to the players. They can easily continue to do the 162 games before that. I know we got to go to break. But let me just set this up real quick. So we're going to take a little bit of a left turn here. Coming up tomorrow is the 25th anniversary of the X Games. So celebrating the 25th anniversary of the X Games. Good friend of the radio station, good friend of myself personally, Brandon Graham, who is the World X Games host. He's coming up next. We'll get a chance to talk to him. By the way, as big of a fan as it comes to from baseball and NFL, so we could ask him some questions on that front as well. That's coming up next. Stay right here. Sliwa Show, Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison. Hi, Alan Sliwa here and Kirk Morrison. Go until 9 o'clock tonight. Happy to bring on a good buddy of the station, Brandon Graham, World X Games host, X Games celebrating their 25th anniversary. Brandon, what's going on, man?
Sliwa.
What? How you doing, man?
Good, fellas. Okay. How are you?
Well, let me first tell this quick story. So, Kirk, one of the best memories, I was only at the station for maybe 6-7 months, maybe 8 months at that point.
Yeah.
One of the best memories I'll ever have at the station, and I was completely fine if they canned me after 8 months, because Brandon and I were together at Staples Center. It was Lakers Game 7 versus the Boston Celtics. We were celebrating like it was 1999, and that's Brandon and I getting that opportunity to be at Staples Center for that 2010 championship Game 7. After that, Brandon, I don't know about you, I was like, I'm good. They could can me now. I already won.
Kirk, I want to make one small note about that story, and that is that it was back and forth, if you remember, in the fourth quarter of that Game 7.
Yes.
And we were all sitting in a luxury box, and every time I was in the box, the Celtics took the lead.
Oh my gosh, so they would make me leave.
When I left to go to the bathroom, then the Lakers went up. And Sliwa told me, literally with like 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, I had to leave the box. I could not sit with them and watch the game. So I actually had to watch
I had watched from the Lexus Club. Poor guy.
Kirk, you superstitious at all or no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When you got something working, I mean, you got to stick with it. That was a critical,
you
got
to stick with it.
That's a critical moment, right?
Yeah.
All right, Brandon. So, listen, I want you to tell us a little bit about anniversaries tomorrow, 25 games or 25 years, 25th anniversary for the X Games. Walk us through it, because I think your journey and your kind of evolution to becoming, you know, one of the main guys for the X Games, World X Games host, is so unique. But before you do that, tell us the journey of X Games. I mean, here we are, 25, the 25th anniversary, and the sport has come so far. Just how has that been? How has the evolution been for the X Games in general?
Yeah, I think it's wild, right? I think X Games is sort of synonymous with action sports, and I think we just, in a blink of an eye, it feels like it's been youth culture or up and coming. And like I said, the blink of an eye, we're turning 25. The very first X Games was in Rhode Island in 1995, the Extreme Games. And here we sit now 25 years later, still, you know, penetrating the culture and, from, you know, our sports and our athletes and our moments and the music. It's really a lifestyle platform that ESPN created, essentially because it needed broadcast content when ESPN2 was coming around 25 years ago, and for it to become the global phenomenon, to where kids grow up wanting to ride a skateboard, BMX, motocross, freestyle, snowboard, ski, snowmobile, what have you, at the X Games 25 years ago. That didn't seem like something you could ever dream of doing professionally and making money at, you know, competing, and X Games really changed the game 25 years ago. So we're really excited. Unfortunately, due to COVID, this summer's event, as you might have mentioned, was canceled, but we're still having fun. Tomorrow we take over ESPN2. I think it's like a 5-hour block starting at 3 o'clock Pacific. Greatest moments, highlights from that first ever Extreme Games, like I said. And, we're also having a Legends panel tomorrow on our YouTube channel, which I'm really excited about. If you get a chance at noon tomorrow, Pacific, Tony Hawk, Travis Pastrana, Matt Hoffman, Sal Masekela back in the mix. So that's going to be some really good conversations tomorrow.
You know, Brandon, I'm glad you brought those names up, because those are the names to me that when I think of the X Games, I think of Tony Hawk, Travis Pastrana, Matt Hoffman, and especially my buddy Sal Masekela, because those are the guys, I think, like the ground roots of it. Right. And so now, my question to you would be, what is the biggest thing that you that you've seen in the 25 years from year one to where it's at right now? What's been the biggest change? Is it the exposure? Is it social media? What's been the biggest thing that you've seen the X Games gain over the last 25 years?
Yeah, man, that's a really great question, Kirk. I honestly think, as you alluded to with those guys, I mean, that was the golden era of the X Games. And I think, you know, everyone remembers, whether or not you've ever stepped on a skateboard before in your life or not, everyone sort of remembers Tony Hawk landing the 900 in 1999 in San Francisco. And that was such a landmark moment, not only for himself and his career in skateboarding, but I think it also more or less really truly legitimized X Games as sort of must watch on your TV. And there's been moments like that sprinkled over the 25 years. Travis Pastrana landing the double backflip in motocross, best trick at Staples Center. Yeah. And still to this day, if you walk around Staples Center, you'll see their top 10 moments. And, I mean, amongst the Lakers, Clippers, Kings, Sparks, all the concerts, that moment, Pastrana landing that double back at Staples, is the number 2 all-time moment at Staples Center. So it's just really neat to see, you know, people taking a chance and ESPN really giving so many young athletes a platform. And we just see it year after year, the evolution of just young athletes. And to see, you know, we have athletes as young as 10 years old competing and doing impossible things like 1080s on a skateboard, globally, you know, all over the world, just different athletes in skateboarding and BMX and freestyle motocross, like I said, and then certainly on the winter side, snowboard, skiing. It's just amazing to watch these athletes be given an opportunity to showcase what they're capable of doing amongst the world's best. on a television broadcast and social media platform that's just unrivaled. So it's just really cool to see, like, Nyjah Houston, I've known him since he was 13 years old. He's now the biggest, most famous, richest skateboarder on the planet. And that's due all because of his talent. But to watch him at X Games at 11 years old, I mean, that makes me really proud to see that kid grow into who he is now.
Brandon Graham, World X Games host. X Games is celebrating their 25th anniversary coming up tomorrow. Brandon, I know you've got the opportunity, and it's probably one of the coolest things to do, just being a host. You're traveling to different parts of the world, different, obviously all the different areas of the country. But are there some places where, you know, you World or the X Games is holding an event, and you know, you educate us on this one, where you had no idea that this, you know, it's a 50,000 place stadium where you guys are doing it outside or whatever the case is. What parts of the world were you just shocked to know that there are this many people that are excited and involved or wanting to be a part of X Games?
Man, X Games really knows no borders. And I got involved with X back when it was in L.A., and it was in L.A. L.A. Live and Staples Center home for 11 years. And that really made sense because it was the epicenter of action sports. But man, just to be able to travel the world, we've done X Games in Spain and in Germany and in Australia and Brazil, and it's just in China last year. I mean, I was blown away. You just have no idea. I'd never been to China before. And we did an event in Shanghai last summer. And to see the crowds come out, you know, who don't even speak any English and yet know all of these athletes. Of course, there's a global flavor, but to know all of these American athletes and to try to speak English to them and get autographs, like, that was so rad to see really the reach of what we do in our world. So I think that's the biggest perk is honestly getting to travel the world. And like I said, it's just, I don't care what language you speak. There's really nothing more gratifying than just seeing the universal love that everybody has for X Games.
You know, Brandon, with the 25th anniversary being celebrated on June 24th and being able to kind of look back at, like you mentioned, a lot of the great moments in X Games history. You mentioned a lot of the legendary guys and figures within the sport, but what can you kind of foresee for the X Games possibly toward the future when we leave the pandemic and get into 2021? What's the future, do you think, of X Games?
Yeah, I think just when I think, well, we've pushed the progression. Like,
right,
we can't, you know, I look at snowboarding, right, and big air and slope style contest. And first you see a double cork and you're just like, whoa, you'll never top that. And then there's a triple cork, and you go, how, it's not humanly possible to
right.
do more than that. And then it's the quad cork, and I know I'm saying things, and it's probably, you know, sounding like trigonometry to a lot of the listeners, but it just, what I'm getting at is it just seems like every year you think this is it, this is the pinnacle, and yet somehow, some way, there's some 7-year-old kid that's at a skate park right now in L.A. who's like, I'm going to do that plus X, Y, and Z, and in 3 years, he or she will probably do that. So I think what we've been able to see and accomplish, especially on our digital and social channels and being able to highlight clips, now athletes can really post their own stuff. I mean, you used to wait for a team video if you were a skateboarder, right? To see what your favorite skateboarder was doing. Now he or she can post it on Instagram, anything they got that day. So I just think content is king, right, across any sport. So being able to see what our athletes are able to do and to kind of collaborate on projects like that is really neat. And that's why I love our World of X Games weekly show that airs on ABC, because we get to do a lot of these rad passion projects that sometimes aren't as quantifiable on an event stage.
All right, Brandon, I'm going to, we got Brandon Graham, World X Games host, X Games celebrating their 25th anniversary. That's coming up tomorrow. Brandon, we've had so many conversations in all the sports, so I got to get your take on this. NFC West, we got Kirk here as well. How excited are you if we get the opportunity to play out, you know, obviously this season for football? How excited are you just for some of these other sports? I know when we got a chance to work with each other for a number of years here at 710, you know, you're a big baseball fan, you're a big basketball fan, and football, you know, a true love for. If we get football back, how do you think that stacked NFC West with the Niners, the Seahawks, obviously the Rams, how do you think it all shakes out?
It's going to be a bloodbath, boys. I'm telling you right now, it's the best division in football because you have the 49ers who are the class of the NFC. We know that. That is fact. You have the Rams who are just 2 years removed from a Super Bowl appearance. You have the Seattle Seahawks who may actually have the most talented roster in the division. I'm just saying that. I don't believe it. And then you have Arizona Cardinals who probably are the most improved team given this offseason. So any of those four teams can earn a playoff spot, but I think when the dust settles, and I hope that there is a season that the 49ers clinch once again the number one seed in the NFC and go 14-2.
Kirk, do you hear this guy? Do you hear him talking?
Hey, and guys, baseball is back.
Yes.
Did you guys know that? I don't know if you guys have talked about that at all tonight. Baseball is back.
Yeah, Brent, I have it. I refuse to open up Twitter the day I do a show, so I have no idea what's happening today. No idea at all. but that is Kirk. Go off of that because I think you know Kirk and I we did a couple different shows just specifically on the schedule coming out and everything else. And a little bit later in the show, we'll talk a little bit about just the NFL in general and how we think things are going to play out, but. It is. You said this a while back, too, Kirk, that you thought it was the best division in football. And by the way, him talking about the 49ers and you mentioning the Seahawks, what about the Seahawks? And nobody's even mentioned the Rams yet. Just shows you how competitive it's going to be.
Well, I think it's going to be not only the best division in the NFL, but and this is something, Brandon, I can ask you as well, is that we always want to see. And to me, when the stakes are at its greatest and the NFL this year will expand their playoff. It will no longer be six teams per conference. It'll be seven teams. And if the Rams, if they had the seven, you know, teams per conference last year, the Rams would have been in the playoffs. So you would have possibly had three teams from the NFC West in the playoffs, possibly. I bring this all up because I believe that the Cardinals are going to be a team that no one probably wants to see. The Rams are going to be a lot better with Jared Goff going into year five, year four in the Sean McVay system. Okay, Russell Wilson is an MVP candidate as soon as they snap their first snap of the season. And then obviously the 49ers, they bring back pretty much their entire team that went to a Super Bowl a year ago. But that being said, Brandon, I can ask you this question now is that how do you incentivize the players more, right? I see it, I mean, the athletes more, right? I see it with the UFC, right, where you have Dana White has the knockout of the night or the fastest knockout or the fastest win or whatever it may be. It's how do you, like, up the ante, up the stakes when it comes to the X Games?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we've done different things in the past with the X Games, but I also think it's such a breeding ground for young talent, and for so many of them, there isn't a 16 or 17 game schedule. There isn't an 82 game season for these athletes where they can take anything for granted. They have the X Games, whether it's winter or summer, circled on their calendars every year. That's the biggest contest. If you are a snowboarder in the super pipe, that's the biggest contest for you. If you're a skateboarder in park, that's the biggest contest for you. And I think it's really cool to see these moments, right? Like Chloe Kim, who became an Olympic darling just a couple of years ago. I mean, she cut her teeth on the X Games stage when she was 13 years old. Ryan Sheckler winning gold in 2003 when he was 13 years old. Shaun White really making noise in both snowboarding and skateboarding on the X Games stage throughout his teenage years. So a lot of these names that were able to penetrate the mainstream for whatever reason, whether it's a video game like Tony Hawk or the Olympics or anything like that, it generally came from X Games first. And that really kind of set the stage for them. So I think just being able to seek out a potential career that you don't even necessarily think this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life at 14. But the next thing you know, you're doing things and competing with the world's best. And now all of a sudden all eyes are on you. And that's what's really neat to see. And I just think you can't take any days off. I mean, in all of our sports, by the time you're in your mid to late 20s, you know, you're considered over the hill. That wasn't always the case, but that's the reality because everything is skewing younger across the board, every discipline.
Brandon Graham, World X Games host, X Games celebrating their 25th anniversary. Brando, it's great to connect. I know it's been a while. I appreciate you taking some time to join the call.
Oh.
This is a bronze.
That's my
special.
You got to send my boy out right.
I'm back, baby.
A bronze special right there. Thank you for doing this,
that
Brandon.
That was our song, Late Night Action. Don't forget it.
Look, good luck with everything and with the fam and everything else. Tell the fam hello, all right, buddy?
Hey, right back at you. Gentlemen, it was an absolute pleasure. Have a great rest of your evening.
Thanks, Brandon.
All right, that's Brandon Graham right there, World X Games host. You know, Bronny, I actually did not know that was his – that was his. He used to do his show, Kirk, every – what was it, Wednesday nights? X Games, Action Sports with Brandon Graham. But Bronny, was that the intro music, the outro music? What was that right there?
That was Brandon's favorite song for Late Night Action back in the day. Now go do your show while I talk to him off the air.
Look at that. Okay, here's a Kirk. I got a question for you.
Sure.
Because this came up yesterday. Is it selfish to want sports back right now? Is it selfish to want sports back? Had a couple callers call in yesterday that mentioned this. So I want to do that when we come back. By the way, just a reminder, Pedro Mora, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Dodgers. He's coming up at 7:30. We'll get back into, obviously, all this news with baseball, and we'll also hit on the NBA. But coming back, is it selfish to want sports back? Stay right here. This is Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison on The Sliwa Show. All right, just a quick reminder, 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who is working as a healthcare provider, firefighter, EMS worker, or a food service professional, nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, with your first and last name, city, and occupation. Or you can post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift to include $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com and Shooteria.com. So thank you to our partners, and of course, thank you to all our frontline workers. So Kirk, yesterday doing the show, and yesterday was Lakers talk. So predominantly, you know, obviously talking NBA and Lakers basketball. But I got a caller that called. I actually had a couple callers that call in, and they specifically were talking about how they didn't think it was the right time to have sports return, that we should kind of punt and, you know, let's not take all these risks and so forth. And then one of the callers even said that it was selfish to want sports back. By the way, I get the premise. You know what I mean? Like, I understand what there's going to be fans out there that say you're trying to do this. You're trying to bring sports back during a pandemic. You know, we spent the last month and a half or so where there are a bunch of people across the world marching up and down streets trying to make change. Raising awareness for police brutality, social injustice. There are a lot of things that are pointing towards, you know what, maybe this just isn't the year. But do you think it's selfish to want sports back, or do you think that's just kind of part of our – this is part of wanting to kind of have some kind of norm back as well?
No, I would say this, Alan. It's not selfish. I think for a lot of people, sports bring them joy. It brings them, and I think it's especially fitting for right now with what our country is going through, right? Sort of the unrest, the social injustice, police brutality. There's a lot going on within our country that has divided many people, but it's also brought many people together. The one thing I can say is for me, going to so many different sporting events throughout my life, right? And I've been there as a fan, as a player, and just an analyst. But I always remember the games that I went to as a fan, okay? And I know you've been there in terms of going to see Laker championships. I've been to championship events to see one of my teams win a championship. And I would tell you this. It was something that brought us all together. It didn't matter our skin color, skin tone, what you liked, your political party that you voted for, nothing, man. It was high fives all around. It was the enjoyment. Sports brings people together, right? And we don't care what your background is. We don't care where you live, where you're from, what you believe in, nothing. If you bleed the same colors that I bleed, I mean, man, it's something powerful that what sports can do, right? It makes grown men cry, right? It makes us all think about certain moments in our lives where we were when our team won a championship or had that special moment. And I think we've missed that. We've missed that part of it, right? Especially this year with the NBA, with so much, you know, promise for some teams, right? New teams that possibly have a chance to win a championship. Obviously, it's been about LeBron James and Anthony Davis, right, in the Lakers. And will they win? And selfishly, I think a lot of people, you know, want to see what will happen. Sports was that outlet, and we've missed that outlet. And I don't think it's selfish at all, because with so much that's going on, not only with our country, but you think about the pandemic, and every day it's kind of the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe someone told me today, was it yesterday, to type in a 3-digit number in your search engine, right? Your internet search engine, just type in a 3-digit number, and then next to it, type in the word or words "new cases" and just press the enter button. And all that pops up is new COVID cases throughout the country, throughout the world. It would just baffle me. I just randomly put 327, right? I was like, 327. I put in 327 new cases.
And there's going to be a city that has
327. Or how many times 327 comes up. And I'm like, at some point, like me and my wife, we've talked about it, that it becomes exhausting.
Sure.
And it also becomes depressing, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes I don't want to feel depression, because I felt it during this pandemic at times, right? Because we so want to get back to how things used to be, and it won't be the same, right? We're going to do things differently now. But sports, we hope it goes back to what we saw. We may not be able to be there in person, but we can be able to watch it. So, yes, for me, selfishly, I want sports to come back. I'm not going to forget what's still going on, because it's always around me, right? It's going to be on my local news. It's going to be in my LA Times tomorrow, right? It's going to be in the things that I look at every single day. But I also have another outlet that I didn't have over the last 3 months that definitely, for a lot of people, it's their coping mechanism. It helps.
We're accustomed. I mean, Kirk, think about this. We're accustomed to this, right? Like, how many times have you heard people talk about sports? And I don't even have to say this. I can just, as a fan of sports, and get a chance to sit in this seat. I'll use Lakers as just an example. My favorite Laker memories, they're not even when I'm at Staples Center. And they're not even, you know, over these, you know, I've been grateful over the last 10 years to work for the station that carries the Los Angeles Lakers broadcast. My favorite memories are when I'm a kid growing up, the family's all together, you know, you're watching games, you're, you know, as nervous as can possibly be, the ups, the downs. Like, that's part of, if you're a sports fan, that's part of your childhood. A lot of those memories. Yesterday, I'm doing Lakers talk, and I played a clip of Kobe Bryant from his rookie year, and Chick and Stu were on the call, Chick Hearn and Stu Lance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm getting all these tweets of people saying, oh, man, that takes me back to the day. Oh, you know, when I was a kid, this happened, that happened. Sports is such a big part of people's lives. So when somebody says it's selfish, I get what they mean by it. And I don't think they mean anything malicious by it. But you know, what I come back and say is it's such an important part of people's lives. A lot of somebody's best memories with their dad or with their family might be at Dodger Stadium. You know, since they were a kid, they're going to the ballpark. You were telling stories back in the days up in the Bay Area,
yeah,
where you're going to, you know, the Giant games or A's games or whatever the case is. sports is something that we've never had taken away from us. It's the first time it's ever happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the first time, man. And I'm just like, I want it back. I think a lot of people can tell you that.
No, everybody
I think a
does.
Lot of people, Alan, will tell you they want it back. Right? I'm tired. I've watched all the Netflix shows. Okay, I'm done. I'm tired of it.
Well, look, I'll tell you somebody who definitely wants sports back. Pedro Mora, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Dodgers. He's coming up next. Excited to get his thoughts on what this baseball season is going to look like specifically for the Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll do that coming up next. I'm Alan Sliwa here with Kirk Morrison. Stay right here. This is 710 ESPN. Kirk, did you ever get that one figured out? The labor baby? Did you ever go back and figure that one, or we still don't know? Don't show me the labor. Show me the baby. What happened? We got Kirk there. Kirk with me here.
Kirk was busy taking care of a screaming child. I had to keep him off for a second.
Oh, okay. All right, Kirk. Go take care of that. Let me welcome in real quick Pedro Mora, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Dodgers. Pedro, thank you for doing this, man. I appreciate you being a part of the show. Here we are. We finally got here. 60 games confirmed. The Dodgers will get a chance to get back, hopefully, to playing baseball. Just your initial thoughts on everything that took place over the last couple of hours.
Yeah, it's wild. You know, for a while there, I'm sure anyone listening to this really questioned whether this was actually going to happen, whether they were even going to come to an agreement. And the wild part about it is that the agreement now comes amid, you know, outbreaks within Major League Baseball that are going to put into question whether this season will actually happen. So although the sides have agreed, you know, 60 games, 10-team postseason, potentially, you know, 3.5 months of baseball, there's still, you know, maybe 3 months of baseball, let's call it. There's still so many questions about, you know, can this actually be done? We just don't know.
Yeah, Pedro, that's the thing that I was saying to myself is that, yes, we know the timeline, correct? July 1st. So a week from tomorrow, Wednesday, teams are going to report to their specific training facilities. Opening day, July 23rd, 24th, and sometime. To me, I said, that's not a lot of time, right? There's still, you know, room for something could possibly happen. So until the first pitch is thrown, Pedro, I'm still not all the way in. I'm in as far as right now what I can see. But would you be surprised if there is a hiccup in what may possibly happen over the next couple of weeks?
No, not at all. In fact, I would go so far as to say that that's what I expect to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are talking about already right now, we are seeing players across the league test positive. I mean, the Phillies had an outbreak that required the sport to shut down all their spring training facilities. The Denver Post reported tonight that Charlie Blackman, you know, a star within the National League West, has tested positive. The teams and players have been unable to control the spread of this virus, even while the sport hasn't even been officially coming together to train. And now you're asking players to, as you said, Alan, a week from this, you know, in 8-9 days to convene for spring training and start this and train, you know, 30 to 60 players, depending on if you include the taxi squad, and you're asking them to train every day and then start traveling across the United States. There's really nothing to indicate that they're going to be able to do that without anyone testing positive. So a hiccup should be expected, I think.
Pedro Mora, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Dodgers, joining the Sliwa show. Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison here. So Pedro, just, you know, we've done this over the last couple of, you could say for the last maybe 30 days or so, you know, baseball, we want the conversation to shift from trying to come to an agreement to the conversation that we're having right now. Is it going to be safe enough? What are going to be the health protocols? How are they going to get through the season? Would you agree that, you know, trying this out is the right thing to do, not knowing what's going to, you know, obviously happen over the next 30 days, 60 days or so? But do you feel like do you think there are a growing number of players that decide, you know what, this short end of a season, too many health risks, you know what, I'm out. I'm not that concerned with trying to, you know, force this season through. Or do you feel like a lot of players, when spring training starts, or spring training 2.0 starts, they're all going to be there?
That's a really good question, too. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how many players, and coaches for that matter, ask out of competition, right? Players can still receive service time if they're high risk.
if they're deemed to be high risk, or they live with someone who's high risk, and you could see players theoretically opt out even if they do not receive service time. There's nothing stopping them from that. So, to your first question, do I think it's a good idea to try it? Me personally, you know, I wouldn't be willing to do what these players are going to do, but no one's forcing them to, right? And obviously, a lot of them do want baseball, as they have, you know, spoke on social media in recent days. So it's, I suppose, at least by starting with spring training, by starting on July 1st with a non-traveling version of baseball, you're at least putting it in. It's one of the lower risk parts of it. They're not going to get into the other stadiums yet. They're not going to be getting on planes, except to get to their initial spring training site. So it starts somewhat slow, right? And there's 3 weeks of ramp up. So while this first, you know, giving them only 8 days notice to get to where they need to be, I think is pretty wild, at least there are then 3 weeks in which to slowly ramp this up. Now, that said, I still think the idea that, you know, until today, we did not know if there's going to be baseball. And now we're saying 1 month from today, you know, we could easily talk, I could be here talking about opening day. I mean, that'll never make that much sense to me, especially considering how much time they had to sort this out. They could have done it with a little bit more time.
Go ahead there, Kirk.
Yeah. Did we leave?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, buddy.
No. I was thinking about this, though, Alan and Pedro. Now that, obviously, baseball is supposed to be happening, right? My whole thing is now, and I asked this to Alan a little bit earlier, Who has the advantage? Is it going to be the pitchers? Is it going to be the hitters? Like, what should we now start to hopefully expect in these 60 games?
Yeah, good question. I'd hear your guys' opinions, too. I think, in general, early in spring training, which is maybe the closest analog to what we're seeing, you see pitchers able to dominate hitters who have not been able to find their timing yet. Now, that said, I think a lot of hitters across the country have probably been hitting more often than they do, say, in January or something like that. You know, they have not been treating this exactly like an off season. So I don't know. I can see it both ways, and I think that's something I'm certainly going to be following during the spring training as it continues, is, you know, who is looking better, which side is going to have the advantage. You know, and the other question is, that's related to this, Kirk, is, you know, are more pitchers going to get hurt? And is that then going to lead the advantage to hitters? Because this is not a precedented situation for pitchers. They have not done this sort of thing. They've not ramped up this quickly after having to throw off a mound basically continuously with no end in sight for the last few months. And again, until today, they didn't know whether they're actually going to pitch in a game this season. So I think pitchers are more susceptible to injuries. So in time, we might see the advantage really turn to hitters. But this is all speculation. I could easily be wrong.
But Pedro, a quick follow-up here is that I did some quick math with Alan, right? And I was like, 60 games, obviously, hey, 5 starters, right, in the rotation, about 12 starts. If you look at the Dodgers rotation right now, is there a starter right now on their roster that you feel confident that in those 12 starts, he'll be able to ramp it up, maybe pitch longer into some innings? Is this geared more for the younger pitcher rather than the older pitcher or a guy who may be coming off an injury?
Yeah, that's a good question, too. I think that 5 by 12 starts, they could probably get to there. I mean, I think, you know, within a month, because it's not like these guys are going to have come from, they're not going to be building up from nothing.
Right.
So I don't think by a month from then that it's really going to be a disadvantage. But I think the age thing is a good point, that I think someone like Walker Buehler, who throws extremely hard, who has in the last few years really been building up after having Tommy John surgery, would be perfectly equipped for a season like this. But the Dodgers don't have, you know, Clayton Kershaw just turned 32, which isn't all that old in sport and baseball. I don't think they have anyone who's really going to be at a significant disadvantage. And on the position player side, their oldest hitter, Justin Turner, who actually could benefit from this as a potential DH with the new DH rule in the National League.
Pedro Morris, senior writer for The Athletic, nice enough to join the Sliwa Show. Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison. Pedro, can you explain? I was trying to figure this out yesterday, and I know there's a reason for it, but the amount of postseason teams we got, so there's going to be 10 teams. Why do you think the players did not want these 16 teams? Why do you think they did not want the expanded playoffs? Did it just do nothing for them financially? I just figured more games was going to generate more revenue, and that more revenue was obviously going to be beneficial to the players and to the owners. Why just 10 games? Which, let me say, I think there's a lot of people that like that it's 10 games. I wanted to expand it to 16. I thought it would be exciting. But why do you think that was?
I think it's not so much that the players did not want a larger postseason or weren't willing to have a larger postseason. It's that they weren't willing to give that to concede that to the owners without receiving something of their own in the negotiation. And so by not agreeing to the owner's offer and forcing the owners to implement the season, they retain the right to pursue a grievance against the league, you know, and potentially gain something else in that. And they also did not concede. And so they, you know, a lot of the negotiations that we witnessed here over the last couple months, as painful as they were really a precursor to the collective bargaining agreement negotiations that are going to happen in a year plus after the 2021 season. So I think the players were looking at it from a larger perspective. It's not so much that the 16 team postseason would have been a huge problem, but just that they didn't want to give in.
And now that we, and that's the hard part. I think that a lot of people don't know about the behind the scenes part, Pedro, is that we're just expecting, hey, just sign the contract and let's get these games together. But there is now sort of, what about the future in terms of even the minor leagues? We don't talk about the minor league system that's been kind of thrown away. We just had a baseball draft a couple weeks back. What does minor league baseball look like now? I know the focus is major leagues, but what happens with minor league baseball? Is there any thought to that?
Yeah, it's a good question. It basically doesn't exist right now. You know, right. It's essentially totally dormant. And, you know, baseball has continued its efforts to eliminate a significant percentage of minor league teams. And I think, you know, whenever we do see the minor leagues again, it will not look like it did in 2019. Wow. We still don't know where a lot of the players who were drafted, you know, just earlier this month are going to report to for the rest of the season. You know, the only minor leagues to speak of this year are going to be the taxi squads that teams have. So it'll be about 30 players per team that they can train with. And not even necessarily with. It sounds like teams are going to do it at a local college or something like that, where they can keep those players fresh. So the teams can keep their best prospects there. But that's 30 players. You know, that's one team's worth, whereas they used to have 7-8 teams worth. You know, hundreds of minor leaguers that are, you know, they're getting small stipends, you know, during these months for Major League Baseball. But that's about it. They're not getting anything. It's you know, to sum it up, it's been a rough year to be a professional baseball player.
Pedro Mora, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Dodgers, nice enough to join the Sliwa Show. Pedro, final question. We'll let you go after this, and we appreciate your time. How do you think this season can have an effect, you know, on just Mookie Betts in general for free agency? I know it sounds like the market's going to be completely different next year. We'll see what happens. Nobody can predict the future. But just having a 60-game sample size for Mookie Betts with the Dodgers, some of the positives, some of the negatives, should Dodger fans be worried, or is this just really too early to tell any of that stuff?
Well, you have to think if the goal is to attract Mookie Betts to return, it's better to have him play something in Los Angeles than it is not at all, right? I mean, this is a man who still has not lived in Los Angeles. He was acquired by the team in February, right before spring training began, and immediately moved to Phoenix. And before the season could begin, moved back to Nashville, his hometown. So, you know, people have talked about, oh, is he willing to make a 10-year commitment to the Dodgers, 8-9-year commitment? I mean, wouldn't you want to live in the city first before you knew that? So this is an opportunity to do that, I suppose, although it's, you know, not going to be at all normal. In fact, very abnormal. But it's better than nothing, and it provides the opportunity for him to show that he's still the player he has been, right? You would think it'd be easier for owners to commit significant sums of money to prime free agents if those players have played in 2020. So theoretically, the playing of a 2020 season will be good for any and all free agents.
Pedro, thank you for doing this, buddy. Both Kirk and I really appreciate it. And great insight as always, all right?
All right. Bye-bye, guys.
Thanks, Pedro.
All right, that's Pedro Moore right there.
Yeah.
Okay, We'll wait on it just for a sec. Quick reminder, 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who's working as a healthcare provider, firefighter, EMS worker, or a food service professional, nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. Email the station ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com with your first and last name, city, and occupation, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift to include $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, BSLiquor.com, and Shooteria.com. Thank you to our partners. Thank you to our frontline workers. We have some breaking news regarding the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll tell you about it coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show. Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison on 710 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.